the Moshav, and as I said, worldwide speaker. I know Rav Left learns Daf Yomi. I've seen him a number of times, maybe B'chashai. Today's Daf, Memalof, speaks about, the Mishnah tells us that Rav Yechon ben Zakkai, many takonos that he was Mesakai in Zechel and Migdosh. The Mokka, the Gemara quotes the Pasuk Yemiyo. Nidocha, Karolach Tzion, Dorei Sheinlam, Bichlal Dvoi Drisha. Tzion requires Drisha. One has to seek out Tzion. Spoke about this several weeks ago in Parshas Re'eh. My Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal held that the Pasuk in Chumash L'Shichna Sidru Shu Basa Shoma is the Mokka for the Shitas HaRambam, not only is Tfilah Daraisa, but Tfilah No Chamigdosh is also Din Daraisa. That's a Chiddush. And the Ramban there, and the Ramban earlier, the Ramban describes the function of a manig, of a leader, in rather striking, unusual, extraordinary terms. The Ramban describes that which Moshe Rabbeinu was looking for, and this is what he was explaining to his shver, is not just someone who's going to paskin shailus, someone who's going to be a manig of Klal Yisrael, but someone who will be mispalel b'yad cholehem, as they state in Ramban. That's part of Drisha. And if anyone is the model for Drisha Selokim, it's Hagoyin Rav Zev Lev Shlita. And Halavai Hashem should continue to give him many, many koiches. He's mechaber of many beautiful sorim. I happen to have read them. And I've heard him speak countless times over the years. And it's always a schus and a pleasure to have such a wonderful Torah personality in our presence. We thank him. The shiur has been given Leilu Nishmas, Avram Nosson ben Daniel, Nochem ben Yomin, Zechem Livracha, and Halavai, that the Torah that we'll hear tonight should be Leilui Nishmaso Atahira.
I thank Rabbi David, the Mor Zashri, for that overgenerous introduction. I feel a little intimidated to speak after an introduction like that. And I can wait for my Hespedim, so I appreciate it. This past week's Shedra, it's one of the places in the Torah that speaks about Orei Miklat. Someone kills someone, the Shogeg, required to run away and stay in Orei Miklat until the Kohen Gadol dies. The Arizal says that there's a hint in the parish of Orei Miklat, not in last week's Sedra, but in the first time the Torah introduces Orei Miklat in Parshas Mishpatim. Torah says, Vasher lo tzadah, person didn't premeditate the murder. Vaha Elohim ina liyado, the Rabbanu Shel Olam brought it to his hand. V'samti l'chamakom asher yanu shama. I'll give you a place to run away from. Says the Arizal, the words ina liyado, v'samti lach, the Rosh Tevos is elu. So there's some kind of connection between Orei Miklat and Elul. Question is, what's the connection? In order to understand that, I first want to explain in detail what the inyan of Orei Miklat is, and then we'll see how it applies to Chodesh Elul. The Gemara in Makkos asked the following question. There were three Orei Miklat in Eivor HaYarden and three Orei Miklat in Eretz Yisrael proper. The Gemara says it was disproportionate. There are only 2.5 Shvatim in Eivor HaYarden, and they had 3 Orei Miklat. There should have been many more Orei Miklat in Eretz Yisrael, and there are only 3 Orei Miklat for 9.5 Shvatim. Why? The Gemara answers, because B'Gilad Shchichei Rotzchim. In Gilad, in Eivor HaYarden, there was a predominance of murderers, and therefore they needed more Ari Miklat. So all the Rishonim asked the obvious question. Ari Miklat is not for people who go and murder the Kavanah, the Mezim. Ari Miklat is for people who killed the Shogeg. So what difference does it make that there were bands of marauders in Eivor HaYarden? What did that have any connection to Ari Miklat? Tosfos says that everyone who killed, whether B'nai Zid or B'Shogeg, first ran away to Ari Miklat, and then they had the din to decide whether he was Mezid, Shogeg, or Potter. So they needed Ari Miklat for even the Mezidim to begin with. The Maral, the way I understand the Maral, says the following. He says, how is it possible for a person to be a Shogeg? Shogeg is not an accident. It's unintentional, but it could have been avoided. It came from a person being not careful. How can a person not be careful with someone else's life? Says the Maral, if you live in a society where you never hear of anyone murdering anyone, so human life is very important and people are very careful with their own lives and with other people's life. But if you live in a society where shchichei rotzim, where there is a predominance of murderers, and every day with your morning coffee, you read about another murderer and another person murdered or whatever. So you lose your sensitivity to the value of human life. It becomes very cheap. And someone who does not appreciate the value of human life is prone to be negligent when it comes to his life and other people's lives. It's an interesting lesson that could be applied today also to why people are not like you are. Careful with your lives and other people's lives. Baruch Hashem, there's a place here in Eretz Yisrael where people are actually careful to wear masks. And we try to do that by us also. But there are plenty of people who ignore completely and are completely oblivious to their lives and other people's lives. Unfortunately, we live in a society where we're constantly hearing about this one being killed or that one being killed, whether it's in road accidents or it's in murders or terrorist attacks. And unfortunately, we become very, very insensitive to the value of human life. So therefore, because the Gilad Shrichei Rotzim, because in Gilad there were marauders and people who went around murdering, people who lived in that society were insensitive to human life and could be prone to be negligent and not careful with their lives and other people's lives, and there therefore was a predominance of people killing Mishogeg too. Comes out that the foundation of Ari Miklat, of someone coming to be negligent and killing someone unintentionally, results from a lack of sensitivity of the importance of human life. We're talking about human life in this world, not Olam Haba, Olam Hazeh. So first we have to establish, is life in this world so important? It's a very short life, 120 years, and it's not the Iker. The Iker is Netzach Nitzachim, what a person is going to have eternally. So is life in this world really all that important that you have to be careful with? So if you need a proof, Kibud Av V'Em is a very nice proof that life in this world is very important. We normally think that Kibud Av V'Em is predicated on Hakaras HaTov. Parents do a tremendous amount for their children. They raise them, they educate them, they give them a place to live, clothing, food. So a child has a debt of gratitude to his parents. And therefore, Kibud Av V'Em is an important mitzvah. Say some of the Mefarshim, going to put them together. That's not the case. It's not the main reason for Kibud Av V'Em. The proof is, Torah says, Torah reminds us where the mitzvah of Kibbutz Av Va'Em was given in the Midbar. Why? Because in the Midbar, none of those things that I mentioned apply. Parents did not give their children a place to live. The Rabbanus Shlomo, Shavtiyas B'nei Yisrael. Asuko, so Shavtiyas B'nei Yisrael. They didn't give them clothing. The clothing grew with them. They didn't give them food and sustenance. The man fell every day. They didn't get their sustenance from their parents. They didn't need to educate them because everybody was learning directly from Moshe Rabbeinu. You didn't have to learn from your parents what they learned from their parents. Everybody was on the ground floor. And not only that, but these parents harmed their children. Because of the parents' misdeeds, the children had to spend 40 years wandering in the desert. So here you have parents who didn't benefit their children anything. And they harmed their children. And that's what the Torah said, Kabedus Avicha Vesimecha. So if Kibbutz Av Va'Em is not predicated on Hakara Sato, what is it predicated on? Say these Mefarshim very simply. The greatest Hakara Sato that a person has is his very life. Your parents gave you life, even if they gave you nothing more, zero. They abandoned you the day you were born. You still chayav Kibbutz Av Va'Em to those parents. Because they gave you the most precious thing you have, life itself. They only gave you life in this world. That's why the covenant of a Rebbe is more important than the covenant of a father or a mother. Father and mother brought you into this world. A Rebbe brings you into the next world, for Netzach. So that means that the mitzvah of Kibbutz Av Va'Em, which is a chomer min hachamuros, is predicated on appreciation of life in this world. Could be for that reason, the schar for Kibbutz Av Va'Em is long life. If you appreciate life, the Rabbanus will give you more of it. You don't appreciate life, you don't appreciate what your parents gave you, so why should you get more of it? So life in this world is very, very important. But the truth is, that there are two Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos that seem to argue on this way. One Mishnah says, Yofa Shoachas Shel Koras Ruach Ba'olam Haba Mikol Chayei Ha'olam Hazeh. The way the Bali Musar explained that Mishnah, 1 second of Koras Ruach. What is Koras Ruach? So they give a marshal person, they're making a banquet and you're not invited. You can't even get inside the banquet hall to see the food, let alone eat it. The most you can do is walk by the outside of the banquet hall and get a whiff of the aroma of the food that's cooking. That's it. That's called koras ruach. It's an incidental, peripheral pleasure. 1 second of that kind of pleasure in Olam Haba, not the main pleasure, the peripheral pleasure, is greater than kol chayei ha'olam hazeh. What does that mean? Take all the pleasure that anyone in this world ever had from Adam and Chava till the end of time. Take all that pleasure and put it all together. All of that pleasure together is nothing compared to 1 second of pleasure in peripheral pleasure in Olam Haba. That makes nothing of this world. Nothing at all. It's not important. That there's another mission in Pirkei Avos, says the opposite. Yofa Shoachas, Shel Tshuva Maishim Tovim Ba'olam Hazeh, Mikol Chayei Olam Haba. 1 second of Tshuva and Maishim Tovim in this world is greater than the whole next world. So if we were scholars, academians, we probably would say, well, there are two schools of thought amongst the rabbis. There were the this-worldly rabbis who liked this world, and then there were the other-worldly rabbis that liked Olam Haba. And it was an argument in Hashkafa between the rabbis. There's only one problem. The same Tana, Rabbi Yaakov, said both of these Mishnayos. He was not schizophrenic and didn't argue on himself. But there must be some qualification as to when Olam Hazeh is better than Olam Haba, and when Olam Haba is better than Olam Hazeh. In order to illustrate that, I'm going to start with a medrash. The medrash is in Koheles Rabba, and the pasuk "Be'uvas lo yuchal lishkon." There are certain things in this world that are irreparable. They're crooked and never can be corrected, never repaired. And the Medrash gives the following story as an example of that. The Medrash says there were two Rishoyim who were partners in crime. They murdered, they robbed, and they did it together. They did it as partners. And one of them died, and he went to Gehenna, which I guess he expected, right, for all the crime that he committed. He went to Gehenna, he's suffering in Gehenna. It doesn't say for how long, but for a considerable amount of time. And one day he looks up and he sees that they're escorting the neshama of his partner into Gan Eden. She calls over the malach who is appointed over the neshamas in Gehenna. And he says there must have been some computer error here because that's my partner. When I murdered, he murdered. When I stole, he stole. If he deserves to be in Gan Eden, then so do I. Get me out of here. And if I deserve to be in Gehenna, so does he. Bring him here to keep me company. The Malach goes, checks it out, comes back and says, sorry, there's been no error. He deserves to be in Gan Eden. You deserve to be in Gehenna. Says, I get it. He bribed somebody. Just tell me who and how much. I will double the amount. Just get me out of here. The Malach said, sorry, but there is no bribery here. So the man says, well, explain to me then, why is my partner in Gan Eden and I'm in Gehenna? He said, I'll tell you, you don't know what happened after you died. You see, you dropped dead one day in the street and nobody wanted to bury you. They left their body rot in the street for 3 days because you were such a despicable person. Finally, after 3 days, some benevolent person kicked your body into a hole in the side of the road, and that's where you're buried. When your partner saw this, and he started to rethink his whole life, is this the way I want to end up? One day I'll drop dead and nobody wants to bury me. I'll lie rotting in the street. And he eventually became a totally repentant person, a real Baal Teshuva. And he ended his life as a tzaddik gomer. So he is in Gan Eden, and you never did any tshuva. And if it's bothering you, well, maybe the first person didn't have anybody to arouse his tshuva, or the second person did, right? The Medrash is not telling me the whole history of both of these people. It's just bringing out a point. So let me allay your conscience and your... The first guy also has somebody you could have learned from. It's not mentioned in the Medrash because it's not relevant. Okay, so now you can not have any timers on the edges. Okay. In any case, the guy says, oh, that's great. I thought this was going to cost me money. I'm also willing to do tshuva. Just tell me what to say. Oshamnu, al-chay, right? Believe me, if I would have known where I'm going to end up, I never would have done it. I regret it. I won't do it again. Chotosi, avisi, get me out of here. The Malach says to him, I'm sorry, but it's a little late. Don't you know the world you came from is like Erev Shabbos? And the world you're in now is like Shabbos. If somebody prepares his meals Erev Shabbos, he has what to eat on Shabbos. But you didn't prepare anything. You didn't do tshuva before you came here. Now it's Shabbos. Now it's too late to do tshuva. You should have done tshuva before you got here, just like Erev Shabbos is necessary for preparation before you get to Shabbos. Shabbos is too late to prepare. And don't you know, the Malach said, that the world you came from is like the dry land, and the world you're in now is like the sea. If you prepare your boat with supplies on the dry land, in the middle of the ocean, you have what to eat. But you didn't prepare. You sailed with an empty boat. Now you're in the middle of the ocean, and there's no place to go buy supplies. There's no supermarkets in the middle of the ocean. So it's too late now. Now it's too late. You're in the middle of the ocean now. You didn't prepare your supplies on the dry land. And don't you know, the Malach said, the world you came from is like a city. And the world you're in now is like the desert. If you prepare a survival kit in the city, you can survive in the desert. But you didn't prepare a survival kit in the city. You came into the desert unprepared. Now it's too late to prepare in the middle of the desert. And the man realizes that it's a mu'uvas lo yuchal lishkon. There's no way of correcting the situation. He is doomed to remain in Gehenna, and he bemoans his fate. That's the medrash. Two things bothered me about this medrash. Firstly, the Malach gave this person three mishalim, Erev Shabbos and Shabbos, Yabosha and Yam, and Ir and Midbar. There's another mashal that is in a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Ha'olam hazeh domeh leprozor b'fnei ha'olam haba, hashkein hashmecha beprozor kedei shetikom yisletraklim. This world's like a preparation room to a castle. Prepare yourself in the preparation room so you can get to the castle. Why did the Malach give him three mishalim and not tell him something that's in a Mishnah, much more authoritative? Why didn't he tell him, didn't you know this world is like a preparation room? This world in Olam Haba is like the castle. You came from the preparation room. You didn't prepare, so you can't get into the castle. Why did he tell him three other mishalim and not mention the one in Pirkei Avos? And secondly, I'm sure the guy got the message after the first mashal. Why three mishalim that basically say the same thing in different words? And once, years ago, said this medrash over in my moshav, and one of my balabatim, who now is one of my mechutanim, raised his hand and said, Rabbi, you don't understand. That's Gehenna, listening to long drushes that aren't necessary. I disagree. So why? Why three mishalim that say the same thing, and why not the one in Pirkei Avos? In order to understand that, let's go back first to the two mishnayos in Pirkei Avos, whether this world is better than the next world, or the next world is better than this world. The answer is very simple. It depends what your philosophy of this world is, what it's all about. According to one philosophy, this world is worthless, is meaningless. According to another philosophy, this world is even more important than Olam Haba. What are those two philosophies? The first philosophy is basically a secular philosophy. It has many manifestations, but they all boil down to the same idea. Some are more refined and some are more crass and less refined. But they all boil down to what I once saw on a t-shirt that they were selling in New York many years ago. It had one sentence on it, and it was selling like hotcakes. The sentence was, the one who has the most toys when he dies wins. What does that mean? Toys are things that give you pleasure. They can be objects, they can be experiences. When you're little, the toys are little. When you get bigger, the toys get bigger. This world is a place to enjoy, to amass toys. You're born, eventually you leave this world. In between that time, amass as many toys, as much pleasure as you can. And if by the time you die, you have amassed the most pleasure, you win. Now, I was looking for an asterisk with a footnote, what exactly you win at that time, since you're no longer here. And then I heard about a woman in Los Angeles who, before she died, put in her will that she wants to be buried, not in a coffin, but in her Rolls Royce. And the heirs took it to court and lost. So they buried her in her Rolls Royce. She had the biggest, most expensive toy. She got to be buried in it. She won. She had a really successful life. Now, I'm not exactly sure what she won at that time, since she wasn't going anywhere. I'm sure that her gas mileage was great at that time, since she wasn't going anywhere. But she had a successful life. She ended up life in the greatest toy, got to be buried in it, and she won. Now, if that is your philosophy of life, and again, sometimes that's very refined, but it's basically the same thing. Some people come into this world not for crass toys, Their toys are the opera and culture and whatever. It's also to enjoy yourself. Some people are even higher Madriga than that. What they enjoy is helping other people. They join the Peace Corps and they help other people, but for one reason, because that's what they enjoy. That's why they do it, because that's what makes them happy. But bottom line, this world is a place to enjoy pleasure, whatever that pleasure may be in your experience. If that's your philosophy of life, life starts when you're born, it ends when you die, and you have to fill those two times with as much pleasure as you can, then we can depict life in the following very depressing way. And I didn't come here to depress you, so don't leave before I explain what the real philosophy of life is. But if that's your philosophy of life, then we can depict it in the following way. Imagine a man sitting outside of the delivery room waiting for news of his wife's impending birth. And the doctor comes out and he says, I have bittersweet news for you. Your wife gave birth to a baby, but the baby was born with an incurable, fatal disease. He's going to die for sure from that disease. The man says to the doctor, doctor, give me some hope. There's a cure. No, there is no cure. Okay, you're looking for a cure. Now we gave up long ago. Somebody survived this terrible disease miraculously without a cure. Never. I never heard of such a terrible disease. There's no cure. You're not looking for a cure. No one ever survived it miraculously. What's the name of this terrible disease that my child was born with? Doctor said, you see, when your child was born, he contracted the disease we call life. Some people have survived 80 years, 90 years, 120. We don't know how long it's going to be. But one thing is for sure. Whoever was born with the disease called life eventually succumbed to it. Think about it. Imagine if we would know how many seconds we're going to live. All of us, Mir Tzashem, will live 120 happy, healthy years. How many seconds in 120 years? So it's very simple to figure out. Multiply 120 by 365, and you'll have how many days in 120 years. Multiply that by 24, you'll have how many hours? Multiply that by 60, how many minutes? Multiply that by 60 seconds. In case you're curious, it comes out to be 3,784,320,000 seconds. Okay? So imagine putting up a digital display in the delivery room with that number on it. 3,784,320,000 seconds. And as soon as you're born, push the button and the numbers start going down. While you're sitting here listening to me, the numbers are going down pretty fast. So basically, when a person's born, he begins to die. Could be that's what Chazal mean. Rishoyim b'chayehem nikroyim meisim. We normally interpret that to mean Rishoyim, even when they're alive, are called dead. But I think it can mean something else. Rishoyim b'chayehem, Rishoyim as they live, nikroyim meisim, not a noun, but a verb. They're dying. That's what, they're born. And eventually the seconds are ticking away and they're just getting closer to dying. That's what life is all about. If that's your philosophy of life, that it begins when you're born and ends when you die, and you have to fill it up with pleasure in between. So when you're born, you begin to die. But that's not our philosophy of life. Because if that is your philosophy of life, life in this world is very unimportant. What is our philosophy of life? Kitzur. We didn't begin our lives when we were born. And we don't end them when we leave this world physically. We were created the first or second day of the Bria as neshamos, all of us. And we were very happy, tachas kisei hakovod, whatever that means, for thousands of years. Until one day a malach came and said to your neshama, okay, the time has come for you to go and occupy an embryo that is now forming in the body of this and this woman who happened to be your mother. And you know what? You said, I'm not interested. I'm very happy up here. I'm not going to anybody's body. I don't want to go into that world down there. Just leave me here. And the Mala said, we didn't ask you for your permission. You have to go. So your neshama was put into this forming embryo. And 9 months later, the Malach came back and he said, okay, now you got to go into this physical world called Olam Hazeh. You have to leave your mother's body. And you said then, I'm not interested. I got comfortable over here. It's really nice in here. I don't have to do anything. My mother does everything. She gets sustained in here. It's very comfortable. Most people feel that was the nicest time of their life. That's why they sleep in a fetal position, because they want to get back into the womb. And the Malach said, we're not asking you. Right? You have to be born. So you're born. In the beginning, you don't even want to breathe. You have to be patted on the back to breathe. And you cry when you come into this world. No, you're in this world and you have your life. 120 years, the Malach comes back and he says, okay, now's the time to go back to where you came from, back to the Olam HaRuchni, to the spiritual world. And you say, you know what? I think I'm used to it over here. I'm not interested in going back. Right? I think I'll stay here. And again, the Malach said, sorry, but we're not asking you. You have to leave this world, go back to the spiritual world. And not only that, you're going to have to give an accounting before the Ribono Shel Olam for everything you did in this world. And that is what this world is all about. It doesn't begin when you're born. It doesn't end when you die. This world is a very small part of eternity. But it's a very important part. Because Chazal tell us that the intention of creation was the Ribono Shel Olam, being the ultimate good, wanted to do good to a neshama, to a creation that could receive that good, because that's the nature of good, to want to do good to others. And what is the ultimate good? To have a close, intimate relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam and reach that shleimus, that perfection. And that's called Olam Haba. Tzadikim yosvim v'atroseim v'rosheim v'nehenem izim v'ashchina. That is the ultimate pleasure that could be eternally, having that close relationship to Hashem. But to do that, you have to be like Hashem. So the Ribono Shel Olam said, instead of creating Olam Haba and putting you there and giving you that relationship, but that's going to be unearned. You won't appreciate it. People don't appreciate what they don't earn. It's called Nahama Dechsufa. It's bread that you're embarrassed to eat because you got it for free. In order to make Olam Haba really the ultimate pleasure, it has to be earned. So therefore, the Ribono Shel Olam said, I'm going to put you in a world, a physical world, distance from me, and you're going to create the relationship with me instead of me creating the relationship with you. How do you create that relationship? So that's what we have a Torah and Mitzvahs, but it's not only Torah and Mitzvahs. Torah and Mitzvahs are a guideline to what kind of things make your neshama more godlike. So you can have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu after 120 years, because your neshama will be more like the Ribono Shel Olam. But if you follow the guideline of the Torah, Bechol Drochecho Do'eihu, you can have that relationship. Dash is a kesher. You can relate and have that relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam through everything you do, how you eat, how you sleep, how you have your recreation. You can do it in a way, everything, that is godlike or a way that's not godlike. You eat in a way that's godlike, so then you're making your neshama more like the Ribono Shel Olam, and you'll have a closer relationship after 120 years. You eat in a way that's not godlike, like a fresher, right? Like a zola vasove, so that's not godlike, so you'll have less of a relationship after 120 years. We don't earn our Olam Haba. We create our Olam Haba. Because the Olam Haba is that relationship, and we create the relationship. It has to be like that. Because if you get something for free, for example, let's say you want for your birthday one of these very plush reclining chairs. And you're hoping that your Aunt Matilda will give you that chair for your birthday. And she does. And you sit in the chair, you'd appreciate it. You'd enjoy it. What happens if Aunt Matilda decides to give you a sweater instead of the chair? And now you have to go out and buy the chair. So you work for a month, earn enough money to buy the chair. You buy the chair, bring it home, and you sit in it. You also appreciate it, but much more than before. Because now you spend your hard-earned money on it, you appreciate that chair much more. What happens if they're not selling the chair? So you have to plant trees and raise them until they'll be able to be cut for lumber and make the frame of the chair. And then you mine iron and make it into nails and knock the frame together. And then you raise sheep and shear their wool and make the stuffing of the chair. Raise cotton, spin it into thread, and make the upholstery of the chair. And now you sit in the chair. You'll obviously appreciate it much more because you made that chair. So what do you see? What you get for free, you don't appreciate as much as what you earn. And what you earn, you don't appreciate as much as what you create. So Olam Haba, to be totally appreciated, can't just be earned. It has to be created. You create that relationship with Hashem. So if that's the case, then every second in this world, you can create eternity. And is what you do. And that's brought out by the following Gemara. The Gemara says, there was an infamous sinner, Abelezer ben Dardoi. And in the midst of a sin, something happened that jolted him to do tshuva. Very intense tshuva. So intense that he died. And a bas kol resounded, Ashrecha Reb Elezer ben Dardoi, shemesukin la'olam haba. With that second of tshuva that you did so intensely, you got your olam haba. When Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi heard this, he cried. And he said, Yeshkona olamo b'shoa achas. A person can acquire his olam haba in 1 second. So he tells the Rosh Yeshiva, asks, what was he crying about? He should have been ecstatic. Wow, you can get olam haba in 1 second. Why was Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi crying? Because he realized, said the tells the Rosh Yeshiva, that every second you can do the same thing. There is no limit to olam haba. In mathematics, there's an infinite amount of whole numbers. You can always add another number. Yet there's an infinite amount of numbers between every two whole numbers, an infinite amount of fraction. So in mathematics, there is an infinite amount of infinities. In Olam Haba, there's an infinite amount of eternities. There's no limit. Every second you can create more and more eternity. And how many seconds do we let slip through our fingers and accomplish nothing? That's why Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi cried. Because Yeshkona Olamo, we can create eternity with 1 second. How many seconds do we waste in this world? There's a very interesting difference between these two philosophies and how important this world is. On the surface, if I were to ask you, who values this world more? A person who doesn't believe in Olam Haba, all he has is this world. Or a person who believes that this world is only a temporary place and the Ikar is Olam Haba. So on the surface, we'd say, of course, the person who doesn't believe in Olam Haba values this world more. Because the person who believes in Olam Haba, he has Olam Haba. This world is not so important. It's not true. It's just the opposite. Because a person who doesn't believe in Olam Haba and the whole purpose of this world is acquire toys, acquire pleasure. So any 1 second in this world has no intrinsic importance. Because how much pleasure can you have in 1 second? Zero. You need a lot of seconds. The more seconds you have, the more important this world is because the more pleasure you can have. But that's not the only condition. There's another condition. Quality of life. You can be 19 years old, have 101 years ahead of you, but you're in the hospital, Rahmanul Islam, in a coma. How much pleasure can you have in a coma? Pretty close to zero. So you need two factors to make this world important. One is quantity of time, and the other is quality of time. Only when you have quantity and quality is this world important, not intrinsically important. No 1 second in this world has any intrinsic value. Now, she'enkein, if you have a second philosophy, then yesh kone olamo b'sho'achas, every second you can create eternity. What can you do in a second? Do tshuva. Think about mitzvahs that you don't have to do anything. Yiras Hashem, Avos Hashem, the six constant mitzvahs in 1 second. Aye, what if you're in a coma, Rachmanu Litzlan, in a hospital, but since you're still alive and you can think, even if your brain waves are not are flat, that doesn't mean that you can't think. It means your brain's not functioning. But your neshama is still connected to your body. Your neshama can think. Just can't do it through your brain. As long as your neshama is connected to your body, it makes a difference in your ultimate lot in Olam Haba. So fine. So you can think. You can think about doing tshuva and change your whole life. You can think about the mitzvahs that are dependent on thought. And not only that, you can think about every mitzvah in the Torah that you can't do. But since you can't do it by circumstances beyond your control, machshava tova, kodesh baruch masar kolamaisa, you get the schars if you did the mitzvah, because you want to. You can do every mitzvah in such a situation. So 1 second of life, according to the second philosophy, every second is intrinsically valuable. How valuable? It's eternally valuable. And according to the first philosophy, there is no value at all to any 1 second of life. You need a lot of seconds and you need quality of life to make it at all important. So that's what the Mishnah says. If you have the first philosophy and you're looking for pleasure in this world as a goal, not that you can't enjoy this world, you should enjoy it. But enjoy it because it is everything that you enjoy in this world is a means to reach an end. It's not an end in itself. But if you look at this world just as a place of generating pleasure now, then the pleasure of Olam Haba beats this world hands down. But if you understand that this world is a place of tshuva and ma'asim tovim, this is a place where you create Olam Haba, then this world's even greater than Olam Haba. Because in Olam Haba, you're stuck with what you got. You can't create anymore. And in this world, every single second, you can create more and more eternity. So this world's even greater than the world to come. That is the difference between those two Mishnayos. Now let's go back to the Medrash. What did we ask? Why didn't the Malach tell him a Mishnah? Olam Hazeh Doma Leprozo Bifo Olam Haba. Didn't you know this world's a preparation room for a castle? Why didn't you prepare? The answer is that is the real Hashkafas HaTorah of what this world is vis-a-vis the next world. Meaning the following. Let's analyze the Moshe. Why do they build preparation rooms for castles? For only one purpose. To prepare to go in the castle. There's no other purpose for building a preparation room unless you build it to prepare to go to the castle. What do they equip that room with? Only things that will aid you to prepare to go in the castle. They don't put ping pong tables there. They put all things that are necessary to prepare to go in the castle. And what are you supposed to do in that room? Only one thing, prepare to go in the castle. You don't make brisin there and they don't make chasanas there. They prepare to go in the castle. That's what it was made for. That's what it's equipped for. And that's what it's used for. That's Olam Hazeh. The Rabbanu Shalom had no other purpose of creating this world except in order to give us the ability to earn Olam Haba. Otherwise, he could have put us into Olam Haba directly and accomplished what he wanted to accomplish. The whole purpose of creating this world was for the sake of preparing for Olam Haba. And every single thing that's in this world, kol mashaborak on his powerful bialamo, the bro el lichvodo created it only for that purpose. Every insect in the Amazon jungle was somehow created that human beings somehow needed to be able to prepare for Olam Haba. How? That's beyond me. But that's the fact. And what are you supposed to do in this world? Prepare for Olam Haba, nothing else. That doesn't mean you sit in a corner and say Tillim all day. It's very nice to do that too. But it means that every single thing you do in this world, eating, drinking, sports, anything, has to be done not as an end in itself, but somehow as a means to create that relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that will be eternal. So the world wasn't created for any other purpose. It's not equipped for any other purpose. And it's not supposed to be used for any other purpose. That is the meaning of that marshal in Pirkei Avos. Ha'olam hazeh domeh leproz dor b'tnei ha'olam haba. The Malach said, I'm not going to waste my breath and tell this Rasha, didn't you know the whole purpose of Olam Hazeh was for Olam Haba? Of course he didn't know that. But he told him the following. Maybe you didn't understand that. You didn't understand that the whole purpose of this world was to create Olam Haba. But maybe in your mind, Olam Hazeh was like Erev Shabbos, and Olam Haba was like Shabbos, not the same thing. Erev Shabbos, eat breakfast, you may work a little bit, but the major part of Friday is for the sake of Shabbos, not the entire purpose of Friday. Maybe that you understood. This world's also a nice place, but the main thing is to prepare. Then why don't you prepare for Shabbos? Why don't you prepare for Olam Haba? Why don't you live a life of crime? And even if that you didn't understand, and in your mind, this world was like the dry land, and the next world was like the sea, equal importance. This is a nice world, that's a nice world. But you knew that one day your boat was going to sail. Why didn't you supply it? And even if that you didn't understand, and in your mind, this world was the yishuv, this is the main thing, this is the city. And in your mind, Olam Haba was a desert, meaningless, desolate. But you knew that one day you're going to have to go into that desert. Why didn't you prepare a survival kit? Either because you didn't believe, or you didn't care. So you deserve to be where you are. That's the meaning of the Midrash. Comes out that really appreciating that this world is understanding what its purpose is. That this is only a temporary place where you create eternity. That's what this world is all about. Somebody who doesn't understand that and looks at life in this world as an end in itself. So life in this world, like we said, you're dying every second anyway. So why should I be so careful with my life or somebody else's life? What's the worst that could be? I'll take a few seconds off a person's life. So how do I know? Maybe the guy that I killed unintentionally was supposed to die of a heart attack 2 seconds later. So what did I take from him? 2 seconds? Big deal. But if in those 2 seconds he could create eternity, I took eternity away from him. So therefore, a person who doesn't appreciate the value of life, meaning that life in this world is a place, an opportunity to create eternity, so we have to re-educate him. Because if he would have appreciated that every second has the value of eternity, he would be very careful. He wouldn't have passed on that blind curve and taken that risk. He wouldn't have lowered a safe from the roof unless he checked to make sure that the cable was 100% okay. So a person who is derelict and not careful with other people's lives or his own life, because he doesn't appreciate the value of life in this world as being a place where you can create every second eternity. So we have to re-educate him. So what do we do? First thing we do is take him away from his kviyas, where he's shekeled. Because people begin to think that this world is the main thing because they think that shekels here forever. They don't realize that this is only a means to reach an end. This is a temporary world. So we take him out of the place where he is kavua, where he's shekeled, and we put him into a temporary place in Ordi Mikla. That's the first lesson we tell him. Don't get too comfortable in this world. It's only a temporary place. On the way to Ori Niklat, right, we tell him that you better get there quickly because the Rabban Shalom is concerned that the Goel Hadam doesn't kill you. The guy says, wow, God is concerned about my life? If my life is just eating another steak, what does God care? Must be my life is really important. Not only that, but every few blocks there's a sign that says Ori Niklot with a arrow, not Yashar Yashar, but exactly how you get there. Because he's reminded every second that the Rabban Shalom's concerned that his life is preserved. Must be my life is pretty important in God's eyes. Finally, he gets to Ori Niklot. Who does he find his neighbors are? The Levium. The Levium are the example of living life in this world to its ultimate spiritual purpose. They're the teachers of Torah, the people who are devoted to Torah. They know what life in this world is all about. So now you're going to have that hashpah from the Levium. And you know when this re-education is over, when the Kohen Gadol dies. Why? Because when the Kohen Gadol was alive, so people take him for granted. You know when they really appreciate who a Kohen Gadol is? When he dies. Then they start to say Hespedim. Art Scrolls starts to write books about them, right? And then you begin to appreciate the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol is a symbol of life for its main purpose. He is the one who's supposed to mashpia on Klal Yisrael to understand what living in this world is all about, what the real philosophy of life is. And when do they really appreciate the Kohen Gadol and speak about him? And it's just bathing. So at that point, his re-education is complete. He can go back, and now he'll be careful with his life and with other people's life. The whole year, we are like a rotzeach b'shogeg. We're not killing other people. But because we're wasting our own time and using it improperly, we're killing ourselves. We're denying ourselves of seconds that could be turned into eternity, and we waste those seconds, unfortunately, more than seconds, minutes, hours, days, and who knows what else. So we need a time, an ear niklut in time, to be able to re-educate ourselves and redefine what the purpose of life is. And it's very important we do that now during this month. Because in less than a month, we're going to come on Rosh Hashanah and ask the Rabban Shalom, Zochreinu b'chayim, melech chofetz b'chayim. And the Rabban Shalom has a right to turn to us and say, could you define the term? What exactly are you asking for? Zochreinu b'chayim, can you define what you want? And if we want just another steak, another pleasure in this world, the Rabban Shalom said, I don't know if that's to your benefit. But if we can describe Chaim as being the opportunity to create eternity and to cement our relationship with the Rabban Shel Olam, then the Rabban Shel says, that's what I want to. So we're on the same page. So why shouldn't I give you what you're asking? So if we're going to pray for our lives on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and our lives hang in the balance, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, then we better pretty much know what life is all about. So when we ask for it, we ask for what we really, really want and what really we deserve, and what really is important, and not a life that represents that first philosophy. So Elul is a time before Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, is an ir niklat in time. It's a time to re-educate ourselves as to what the importance of life and the purpose of life is all about. Before we are judged on our life and beg for it on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And that's the hint to Elul. Ani l'dodi v'dodi li. First, understand your relationship with Hashem. His relationship to you and your relationship to him, which is everything that that second philosophy is. That's what Elul is. It's a time to go to Ori Niklot and to redefine your understanding of the real importance of life. And that's what it says in the Zovid Hashem Ori. Acha sho'alti meis Hashem. Really, we only want one thing. Shifti b'veis Hashem kol yimei chayai. Doesn't mean to sit in a shul or sit in the base mikdash. It means to have that relationship with the Rabban Shel Olam in this world and then carry it on eternally. That is acha sho'alti meis Hashem. How do you reach that acha sho'alti, says the Arizal, or says the Ramosha Cordoviro? The Achash is Aleph is Eretz Yisrael. The Ches is Chaye Yolam Haba. And the Tav is Torah. Through Torah. In Eretz Yisrael, because that's where the Torah is complete. That's how you get to Chaye Yolam Haba. That's the Achash of Alta. You want, the goal is Chaye Yolam Haba. That's the middle. How do you reach that goal? Through Torah. And where is the Torah most potent? In Eretz Yisrael. So that's the Achash Sho'alti, he says, Rav Moshe Kordavira. And that is the Avodah of Elul. Where is Elul hinted to? In the Dovid Hashem Ori. Ori is Rosh Hashanah. Nishi is Yom Kippur. Ki Yitzvenei Besuko is Sukkos. Very nice. But most of the time we say the Dovid Hashem Ori is Elul. Where's Elul? Could be Elul was in Lule Hemanti Liros Beshuv Hashem Be'eretz Chaim. The word Lule backwards is Elul. There's the hint to Elul. What does it mean? Says the Gemara in Brachas. The word Lule has dots over the letters, which is a siman. Whenever there are letters in the Torah which have dots over them, it's a siman that you should read the pasuk with those letters and without those letters. The dots are like crossing them out. So the Gemara says what it means is the following. David HaMelech said, Hamanti. Liros b'tuv Hashem b'eretz Chaim. I know for sure there's an Olam Haba. But Lule, I'm not sure if I have a share in that. That's what Elul is all about. To understand 100% what the purpose of this world is. There is an Olam Haba. And that's why this world was created. It's a prozor b'fnei ha'olam haba. There's no other purpose to this world. And now I have to worry, am I using my time properly? Like Lule Hemant. That's what Elul is. To gain a re-understanding, a redefinition of what life in this world is all about before we come to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur and Davin and beg the Ribbono Shel Olam for another year of life. Yirtzeh Hashem, if we use Elul properly and we get our bearings to understand that this world is a prozdor b'fnei ha'olam haba, and we lead our lives in such a way that every second we do things, whatever we're doing, every single thing in this world can be done in a way that brings us closer to Hashem, or Rahman l'Tzlan, in a way that distances us from Hashem, and the results are eternally important. If we understand that, then we'll be zoche to a ksiva v'chasima tova for ourselves, our families, for all of Klal Yisrael. Tich leshona v'kil loseho, this year had a lot of klalos, not only corona, and not only a memshala, which is trying to destroy Torah here in Eretz Yisrael, and not only Iran, and not only anti-Semitism, and even Ben and Jerry's. What could be a worse clover? So Tich Leshona V'Kil Loseha will be Zoche that this year, Tavshin Pei Aleph, will finish and all of its clawless will disappear. Techa Leshona Ubir Choseha, new year, Tavshin Pei Beis, will begin with brachas and all these clawless will disappear. This coming year is a Shnas HaShemitah, and Chazal say that Mashiach is Mesugal to come in Motzai Shviyas. That means by the time Motzai Shviyas comes, Mashiach will already come. So this year should be Tavshin Pei Beis, Tehei Shnas Pidyon Bonim. Should be the year that we will be redeemed. The Vias Goel Tzedek, B'mehrav Yomein.